Here we are, 40th anniversary of King's assassination, trying to make sense of it. And I think we have a very distinguished panel of people to do that. I'd like to, one of the things that is often said is that so-and-so needs no introduction. And if that were really true, and in this case it is true, they will get no introduction. These people should be well known to you, and I don't want to take up a lot of time doing that. What I want to do is to each of us to give some reflection on the meaning of 40 years of time since then, and then to open it up for conversation with you. For me, I think that this has brought back, as probably for many of you, many memories, many thoughts. Usually we start out with our autobiographical reflections. King is someone, his life intertwines with mine in various ways. I was at the March on Washington in 1963. That was my first demonstration. I had the naive sense that they would all be like that. It didn't quite turn out that way. And I remember after the march, getting a ride with a group from New York who were at the march. So for a kid from Los Alamos, New Mexico, this was my first experience of Washington, D.C., and the next day, New York. What better way of really celebrating that adventure of being 19. And that was also the introduction of my time in the movement. At that time, we had a movement, kind of a capital M movement. All of us were in the movement. And by the time of 1968, that had brought me to another turn in my life. In 1967, I decided to leave the United States because of the draft. Spending time from 1967, 1968, traveling around Europe, North Africa, kind of seeing something about the rest of the world. And for a variety of reasons, Susan, my wife, and I came back to the United States. Partly she had gotten very sick in Spain, where we were living in an anarchist commune for a while. It was that kind of days, and we came back late March 1968. So in that week, I returned to the United States. Martin Luther King was assassinated. And it was kind of a way of saying maybe I shouldn't have left, shouldn't have come back after leaving in 67. There was really a different world then, and just some months later, you could come back and you could find that the United States had really changed. King's assassination, I think, is one of those events that happened along with many other events of 1968 to tell us that the world was moving in another direction. And that's what I'd like to reflect on a bit. I think that as a person who has studied King now for 20-some years, been editing his papers, trying to make sense of it, publishing the papers of Martin Luther King, trying to tell people that his life was about much more than the March on Washington speech. And understanding that one of the things that made King great was his sense of vision, was his sense that he understood his historical moment. He understood at the March on Washington that he was really talking to Thomas Jefferson, that there was a dialogue going on about the meaning of the Declaration of Independence. And by 1968, he understood something else. When I look back at the speeches and sermons that he gave during 67 and 68, you can see someone at that age when you begin to reflect about the meaning of your own life. And many of those reflections, I think, resonate with some of the thoughts we might have even today. I think that he was both discouraged and exhilarated. And bringing together those two strange opposites of exhilaration and discouragement, that on the one hand, he understood that he was living through a great historical period. One of the thoughts that he expressed in many of his speeches is that the two decades after World War II were a tremendous turning point in the history of the world. Many of us don't think about this, but for the majority of the world's population, these decades were crucial. These were when we were able to overcome historic systems of oppression. How many generations of people ever get the opportunity to send to the history books systems of oppression that have existed for decades and even centuries? Well, King understood that his generation was part of a world global generation that brought to an end colonialism, brought to an end the Jim Crow system in the South. And he understood the importance of that transformation and what it meant for people throughout the world. And he also understood, and this was what led to the discouragement, what was left to be done. There's another thing that brings King and me together in terms of our lives intertwining, is that just a few days after the passage of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, Watts exploded, South Central Los Angeles exploded. I was there, and Martin Luther King also came to Los Angeles in 1965. And the counterposition of these two events, the passage of the major piece of civil rights legislation, the final major piece of civil rights legislation that was accomplished by that great movement, and within days, an event that reminded all of us that that system of oppression had left a legacy that is still with us today. That's what led King, rather than retiring in 1965, as some probably wish he had done, and just say, you know, look, we won. We've now got civil rights reform. Instead, the next year he was in Chicago. And the following year he was denouncing the war in Vietnam. And in 1968, he was in Memphis. So I think that what we look at when we look at King is a person who understood both the momentous nature of that transformation that had taken place, and yet all the things that needed to be done and still haven't been done today, if he were here with us at 79 years old. The importance, I think, of King is that he was able to understand, perhaps better than any of us, that the civil rights reform simply provided us with a better opportunity to address the real issues. Some of you may be familiar with Volume 6 of the King Papers that just came out last year. And one of the things that that does is it traces King's religious development from the time in 1948 when he was first ordained as a minister. And the very first document in Volume 6 is a paper that he submitted at Crozier Theological Seminary in 1948, in which he laid out his mission as a social gospel minister. It's a very interesting to look at. Because what does he say in that document is that his purpose as a minister is to address the problems of unemployment, slums, economic insecurity. It's an amazing document written by a 19-year-old. And yet when we think, what was he doing 20 years later? One way of looking at King's life, and I'd like to just throw this out as a different way of looking at it, is that Rosa Parks was an accident of history that forced King on a detour for 10 years. That he set out to be a social gospel minister. He set out to change the world in terms of economic injustice. Rosa Parks set him on a different course for 10 years, a very successful course in which he was able to achieve a great deal and see some very momentous changes in the world. 1965, that period of his life came to an end. But rather than retire, he was able to go and say to himself, now I can get on with my real mission. Now it's time to take on the truly important problems in the world. And these are global problems, the problems of international peace, the global gulf between rich and poor. These were the issues that I think were the basic foundation of his mission as a social gospel minister. When we look at his life that way, we can understand the way in which he saw himself in Memphis. And I know Michael Honey, in terms of his work on King during that last few months in Memphis, when we look at that last speech that he gives the night before his assassination, and he talks about, of all the periods in human history, which one would he want to live in? And he goes through all the great periods of human history, and he tells his audience that, no, I wouldn't choose to live in any of those periods. But he says that the world is messed up, but nonetheless, I would choose to live just a few years in the middle of the 20th century, because that was the time when human beings were taking on the problems that we've grappled with since the beginning of civilization. One of the things I think about often is Tom Brokaw and his phrase about the greatest generation. You know, that generation that fought World War II, and it was truly a great generation. My dad was one of those who went to Europe and came back after the war, and ending the fascist threat, overcoming Nazi Germany, that was a tremendous accomplishment. But just think of that generation also, that generation of the two decades after World War II, that generation that changed the lives of the majority of the world's population. Now, I look out at my students today, and I see them, and I just ask the question, you know, just think of where your ancestors were and what they were doing in 1900. What rights did they have? Did they have the right to vote? Were they citizens of the country they happened to be living in? And most of them, when they think about that, they understand the answer to that is no. If they are women, they know that women didn't have the right to vote then. And that rights revolution that transformed the lives of people throughout the world, it seems to me that that is a really great generation. How many of us have the privilege of saying that we struggled and we were able to overcome a system of oppression that had lasted for decades and even centuries? And how many of us, when we say that, understand that we still have much to do? Now, I think the theme of this panel is to look at that period, the last few years of King's life, and to understand, for me, to look at it the way King looked at it, and that is to say how that feeling of optimism that came from that great victory, so that now students have to look in their history books to understand what colonialism was. They have to look in their history books to understand what the Jim Crow system was. Well, I think that when we look at that, we can understand how exhilarated King was in his last days. We can understand how he began to think, well, maybe we can make democracy real for the world's population. Maybe we can deal with the problems of war and peace. Maybe we can confront that gulf between rich and poor. Maybe we can take on these ultimate problems that mankind has been faced with. And I think that understanding that exhilaration that he felt in Memphis, and understanding that if he were here with us today, he would feel a similar sense of exhilaration. Imagine having King with us looking at the present presidential campaign and understanding that Barack Obama would not be where he is except for that victory over Jim Crow and the passage of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And yet he would also be here to remind us of what needs to be done, of understanding that that was simply the foundation on which we can really take on the problems that King was facing in Memphis in 1968, that is, the problems of international war and peace, the widening gulf between rich and poor, and these issues that are still very much with us. So I'm hoping that in this discussion with these three other eminent people here, that we can address not only where King was in 1968 and where we were, all that nostalgia, but also what is the meaning for future generations, the people that we teach, the people that we hope to reach, and what is King's significance for the 21st century. Thank you very much.